Hi, everybody. Welcome to week 9 of the Montana legislative session. This is Blue Bench episode 9. My name is Gabby Crevett. I'm the communications director with the Montana Democratic Party here with...
I'm Shannon O'Brien. I'm a former legislator and a former statewide candidate. And now I get to work with the party during the legislative session to help people get involved.
Quick housekeeping from our team. Reminder for folks, we're hosting a virtual town hall next Monday, March 10th at 5:30 p.m. We'll be sending out Zoom links to our listservs if you're on there. If not, feel free to get in touch with the Democratic Party. We'll be sending you a link for that. On this virtual town hall, we'll have leadership from the House and Senate on the call, and there will be opportunities for questions and answers.
Yeah, it's really an intense time. This last, very, very last home stretch of the first half of the legislative session. And there are so many bills coming through, and it's really tough for all of the legislators to make sure that they're reading each bill and aware of what's going on. So, kudos and many thanks to our legislators who are doing that hard work. And, but I do really want to encourage folks to join in on that town hall meeting. There are some town hall meetings that are taking place in different communities. So check with your local Democrats, the Central Committee, to see if they might be hosting an event throughout. Some legislators show up for those, which is great. But for those of you who are in rural Montana and those of you who might not be able to make a local, then join us. Again, that was, as Gabby mentioned, Monday, March 10th. 5:30, and look for that in your inbox.
Right. And from my understanding, Shannon, today property taxes is on the menu. I know that's a big, big conversation that we like to have. And it's a super important issue for Montanans across the entire state. So what can we look forward to on this episode with property taxes?
So this is a fun conversation I had with Representative Jonathan Carlin, who is out of Missoula, and he has literally taken the House by storm. So first time I met Representative Carlin, I was a senator. He was a graduate student, and his graduate master's project was he drafted up a bill himself, found a sponsor, and they introduced this bill that allowed for out-of-state students to get in-state fees for hunting and fishing tags. So it's just a great bill for recruitment for Montana students in our universities, but it also had a relatively low impact on fiscal note. So it was a great bill. And he was so impressive with how he worked it. And then lo and behold, 2 years later, he works his tail end off knocking doors to get elected. So I've been so impressed with him. And we did have a great conversation, and mostly, we stuck to two topics that are very different. On the one hand, we talked property taxes, which tax policy can get real wonky real fast. It's very complex. And he gets into some of the complexities of property tax, some of the problems and the solutions that Democrats have put forward, which are moving forward. And then the other juxtaposition is we talked about childcare, which is a place that's very close to his heart, not because he doesn't have children, but he just understands how it impacts the economy and the workforce so much. So really impressive conversation. He's just a great guy, and we hope you really enjoy this discussion.
Awesome. So looking forward to listening.
Representative Jonathan Carlin, it is so nice to have you here. Thanks for taking some time out of your busy schedule to be with us.
It's great to see you, Shannon. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, let's just dive right in. A lot of folks have been talking about property taxes and property tax relief. And I know that you knocking on doors, when I was knocking on doors, that was a consistent message we heard, is that people had not only sticker shock, but downright fear, mm-hmm. on losing their homes and not being able to stay in their homes, especially folks who've been in there for a long time and were on a very fixed income. And I know that this is a cause that you have been working on through the interim and working very hard this legislative session. Why don't you share a little bit about what you've been working on and how it's been progressing through this session?
Yes, definitely the top issue that I heard about campaigning both in 2022 and this most recent election. Just last week, we had three big property tax bills pass the House of Representatives after, you know, two solid months of lots of negotiation, some setbacks, and I can kind of walk through what those bills are. One of them is brought by Representative Mark Thain from Missoula County. And that bill it actually started over the summer with myself, Mark, Pat Flowers, a few others who started basically, you know, modeling out different scenarios to see, you know, how can we deliver a meaningful tax cut to the middle class, but do so in a way that's sustainable. One of the, you know, property taxes fund schools, they fund local government, whatever we do, any tax cut that one group or that residents get has to be paid for somewhere else. So it's one of those systems that's very fragile and you have to model it if you want to make good policy. And so what Mark's bill is it's a $50,000 homestead exemption, meaning that for everybody, no application, we're going to reduce your taxable value by $50,000. That shifts some of the tax burden to the other tax classes, which have either been neutral or getting a tax cut. The next part of that bill is a tiered rate structure. So right now, if you're living in a mobile home, you're paying the same tax rate as somebody in a $1.3 million home. So what this does is it creates a graduated tax rate so that, you know, my constituents are going to be getting a tax cut when it comes to their rate. Now, if you've got, you know, a ski in, ski out, multi-million dollar condo, you'd be paying a higher tax rate, but not so much that it's going to be untenable.
Oh, that's great. That's really, really hopeful.
The second bill is a bill that I'm sponsoring. And what this does is it ties income to property taxes. When we hear frustration from people knocking, you know, when I was knocking doors, when you were knocking doors, I think the crux of their frustration is that their property tax burden doesn't reflect their ability to pay. So, you know, I think about a lot of constituents, they're on a fixed income. They bought their house 20 years ago. The price of their home has skyrocketed. That's not a gain that they can do anything with. It's a paper gain. But their property taxes have gone up far faster than their Social Security benefits have gone up, far faster than their income has gone up. So what this does is it's actually an income tax credit where, based on the amount of property tax paid, it sets caps that says you should never be paying X percent of your income in property tax. It's sort of a sliding scale. And so, you know, I'd run some numbers. Let's say your household earnings are $75,000. You have a $4,000 property tax bill. You would be getting a $1,000 tax credit, no application, you know. And then let's say your income stays exactly the same, but your property tax bill goes up. You'd be getting a tax credit that would be larger, that would adjust accordingly. That, on top of Mark Thain's bill, would deliver meaningful relief and provide stability. Both those bills passed the House. And the other bill that passed came out of the governor's property tax task force that convened in the last several months before session. And what that basically does is it provides a preferential rate, so a lower rate for full-time Montana residents. What we did in House Tax Committee and then again in Appropriations Committee is we reduced that rate for the bottom tier. Now, when I say the bottom tier, what I'm talking about here, but the way all the adjustments are to the bill is below $650,000-ish, double the median home value. We were able to drop their rate. And so, you know, I think we made that bill considerably better. And then we put language in the governor's bill that said, if that tax credit doesn't pass, that rate gets even lower. So all three of those bills are now going to be in the Senate. And there's a lot of other tax bills that kind of nibble away around the edges too.
So Representative Carlin, let me just ask you, you know, and I was on tax committee in the Senate, and I know that it's so complex And if you shift, you know, you've got, you've got different classifications and whether it's corporate or whether different types of properties and those kinds of things. Are you confident that, just for the listeners, are you confident that these shifts that we're making in property taxes will still allow for revenue to come in to the state so that the state can provide the basic services that our Montanans need?
Yeah, it will. And that's why we've been so diligent about modeling out these different tax bills, because we sort of have two components. One of them is we want to fund our schools or local services. And then the other part is, you know, the state collects a portion of property tax money. It redistributes it for education. And so what we've done is we've modeled it out the way, local governments are kept whole no matter what, because they'll collect what they need to make their budgets. But we want to make sure that in doing that, we're not hurting our small business owners. We want to make sure that, you know, we're not putting an undue burden on agriculture. And so and that's also, you know, the way we can get it passed. We're not going to be able to pass a bill that shifts the tax burden onto agriculture or onto business, right? We need to find something that's workable. In Mark Thain's bill, we also have a homestead exemption for kind of our Main Street businesses too. And so we keep services whole, and we also provide policy that I think is objectively reasonable to no matter what your constituency in mind is.
Perfect. That's great. Thank you. Yeah, tax is very complex.
Yes.
So complex. And we can go down lots and lots of rabbit holes. But thank you for all of your work with that. So let's shift gears now completely to another way of looking at the world instead of at taxes. Let's look at life through a child's eyes. And you've truly been a champion for childcare in Montana. And the first question I want to ask you before we get into some of the details on the bills, why childcare? Why should Montana taxpayers be spending money on childcare? That's a real fundamental question.
Yeah, it's a good question. I say there's two reasons. The first is, you know, talking to constituents, and you know, when I think about prioritizing time during the legislative session, I try to think about, what do I get the most emails, calls, texts, most conversations with constituents about? One of the issues that cuts across party lines is childcare. Is people, you know, I can actually think of instances in some of the more rural parts of my district back in 2022 when people would be telling me that, you know, they want to work. They want to be in the workforce. They want to work more. They want to be, you know, pursuing new jobs, promotions. But what's holding them back is that they can't afford childcare. At the same time, I served on the Economic Affairs Interim Committee, and in my district includes a lot of businesses in Missoula. And what I hear the most from businesses and business owners isn't taxes. It's not that they want to be able to write something off. It's that they can't find and keep good employees. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons for that, but one of the main reasons for that is childcare, is that we hear about our labor shortage as well. It's really that there's a shortage of people that can afford to work. And so I think that there's a unique sort of alignment of interest there between what I know is good for my constituents, what businesses want. Then we also know that, you know, the first few years of life are critical for development to succeed in school. And the state spends a lot of money on K-12 education. But, you know, when it comes to ages 0 and 5, I think that's a real gap in state investment.
Yeah, and I don't think a lot of people, you know, once you get out of having children, people don't realize that $1,000 a month per child is pretty much the going rate. And so that's really, really expensive per child. And then the other piece I think that people don't realize is, you know, it's one thing to afford it, but half of the families who want childcare can't find it, period. It's one thing to be able to afford it, but it just doesn't exist. It's that childcare desert that's been talked about. And I think that's really important. Okay, so yes. So you're doing some great stuff to solve the problems. Tell us a little more.
Yeah, we've got two bills that got out of committee last week. Well, one of those bills does is it expands the Best Beginning Scholarship Program from, so right now that's a state scholarship program. It leverages federal money, and then there's some state money there. And what it does is it caps child care payments, a portion of somebody's income, I believe 9%. And so instead of paying the full price of child care, which right now is more than in-state college tuition, they pay less. They pay a reduced rate based on their income. And then the providers like it because it gives them stability. And, you know, child care providers want to be offering child care to, you know, working families, but they can't if their customers can't afford it. And so it's a win-win on both sides. Right now, that income threshold is set is at 185% federal poverty. That exact amount depends on your family size, but it's very low. What we realistically see is that even somebody working at, you know, a retail job, fast food job, if you're in a two-parent household, you're making just too much for that scholarship, but you're not making enough to actually be able to afford childcare. So what this does is it sets the threshold for that program at 85% of state median income. That's what our neighbors in North Dakota have done. That's what we see states across the country do. So if you don't create a cliff, like if we can set it at 85% state median income, that encourages people to work, take the promotion, find a job that is going to be right for their family.
So we're looking at a single parent who's able to make $35,000 to $40,000 a year with, you know, one child, and adjusting that to about what, Representative?
It would be about $60,000 a year. Now, it depends on family size, but it would be about $60,000 a year, which is the maximum per federal rules.
Gotcha. Great. Thanks. That's good. That's good. Now, you have another child care bill, too, right?
Yes. And the other one is takes a slightly different approach, but they work together. One of the problems a lot of child care providers face is that they struggle to find and keep workers because they can't afford to pay their workers very much because they can only charge so much. Because if they charge too much, then families can't afford it. So they're in a tight spot. And one of the things that happens, most child care workers are women. When the workers choose to have families of their own, they end up, it ends up not making sense for them to continue working in childcare. I believe statewide, the average childcare wage is about 13 and change an hour. And so for a worker in childcare, they can either make $13 an hour, and that's barely even going to cover the cost of putting their own child in childcare. So then sometimes what happens is the providers will offer free childcare for their workers. But we have, for the safety of kids, there's in law, there's ratios. So per provider, per adult, you can only have so many kids under their supervision. So the more slots they're giving away to their employees or fewer slots that bring in revenue that keep the childcare provider afloat.
Right.
So what we've seen lots of states do is say, no matter your income, if you work in childcare, if that is your occupation, your kids are automatically eligible for the best beginning scholarship. And Montana had a pilot program doing that, and turnover among childcare workers decreased by 20%. So we know this is an effective way to keep people that want to work in childcare, keep people that are, you know, skill, you know, the people working in childcare do. And this is something I try to explain to legislators. We want good people. We want people, you know, they have college degrees and early childhood education. So that keeps these people working in childcare and provides more stability for kids.
That's fantastic. And I know that this legislative session, I'm hearing a lot about childcare connected to economic development and workforce and making sure that the parents have the childcare and they can get out into the workforce, which is great. But I also, as you know, background in education here, that kindergarten readiness piece is really important. And so I'm excited about and hopeful with the bill that Melissa Romano, Representative Romano, introduced about numeracy for early learning. Do you want to talk about that at all?
Yeah, it's a great bill. I think that that's something that will impact a lot of kids and families very positively. It passed the House floor. I believe it's in the Appropriations Committee, but I could be wrong on that. But, you know, I think it's part of when I try to, it's hard sometimes we think about all these different bills, but when you put them together, the way I see it is we want to create a system of early childhood education that's going to be functional, that's going to work for families, be good for kids, create a kind of pipeline into the school system where kids are going to be ready. And I think that's a really important component of it.
Yeah, that's great. So transmittal, this is an intense time. Anything you want to add to our discussion here before we sign off and let you go back to the floor?
It's an intense time, but I will say the public feedback is really helpful because sometimes we're seeing, you know, 9 or 10 bills that we're hearing in a few hours. And it's hard to have the time to do a deep dive on every bill. But when we're getting, you know, feedback, emails, calls, people coming and testifying, that really helps us make informed decisions. So I tell people to keep it coming.
Oh, that's great, Representative Carlin. So with that, I'll put a little plug in for our legislative action meetings. We have twice weekly, and we have now hundreds of people who are registered for those calls. And there's Zoom meetings twice a week. So to our listeners, go to the Montana Democratic Party website, montanademocrats.org, and find out more on how you can get involved and how you can share your perspectives, ideas, concerns, thoughts with Representative Carlin and all of the others. Jonathan, can't thank you enough for being on and taking all the time and the heart and the work that you do to make Montana a better place. Really appreciate you being here.
We miss you in the Senate. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Enjoy.